The Business Buzz Podcast.
You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
Good evening and welcome to the Business Buzz right here on VOW FM 88.1. My name is Mudiyo Gavaz and I'll be your host until about 7 p.m. This is, your weekly roundup of business, finance and economics news, and we're broadcasting right here from our studios in Braamfontein, Johannesburg. Who's to say that a business can't be exciting? Definitely make sure you hold on to your seats as we seek to unpack the world of business and keep you entertained, educated and intrigued. Now, it's a well-established fact that South Africa has one of the most unequal income distributions in the world, despite significant efforts by the state to stimulate inclusive growth. The income gap has actually between the rich and poor has continued to widen in post-apartheid South Africa. So for today, we're going to be talking about taxes. We're going to be talking specifically about what it would mean to have wealth taxes. So that's the show that we are going to be having for today. Now, as already hinted earlier, South Africa, according to Oxfam and other organizations, has done similar research, as one of the most unequal societies in the world. And it also seems that the middle class is bearing the brunt of the country's taxes, whereas the wealthy seem to get off quite easily and the poor continue to suffer. So that's the show we're going to be having. We're going to go because, according to Dr. Ingrid Woolard, a professor of economics at Stellenbosch, a less explored topic is that of wealth inequality and, relatedly, the potential use of a wealth taxation to reduce the wealth inequality while also further diversifying the sources of much-needed government revenue. So for today, as you heard, it's going to be quite an interesting show, and to navigate, help us to navigate this particular topic, we're going to be joined by Basani Baloyi, an economist from FNB, who will, dissect, what wealth tax is, and then how it impacts on the economy. And then in the second segment of the show, we will be joined by Basani Baloyi from Oxfam. We made a little bit of a mistake there, who will engage us on the ethical considerations of this particular issue. So you can tell us what you think. Remember that on social media, you can find us on Facebook, that is VOW FM, that's Voice of Wits, and our other Facebook page, that is the Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VOW FM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. Remember that you can stream the station live on vowfm.co.za, and the podcast of the Business Buzz show are available on VOW FM. On VOW FM and also on vits.journalism.co.za/business. So that's how the show is looking like. On the other side of this, we're getting into the business wrap. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
Business Wrap with Ken Sweatman.
It's time for us to get into the main the business wrap. That's a part of the show where we give you a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news. And on the line, we are joined by a financial expert, that is Ken Swetchenham. How are you, Ken?
I'm very well this evening. And yourself?
I'm doing all right. And how is our economy doing today?
Well, it's a mixed bag, I guess. Our economy's got no real direction at the moment. We've had a couple of very negative stories on the wires today. One of them being that manufacturing output fell by 1.8% in August, and that was the third consecutive month that manufacturing output has fallen, which is not good. Basically, it means we're making less in our factories. Another negative story was that, but it's one that made me smile, is that the Treasury is saying Eskom must recover debt which is owed to them, particularly debt owed by Soweto residents, if they want to get any further bailouts. And they're putting these conditions on Eskom, which might create a problem to us in the future. But on the positive side, our markets had a very, very good day. So difficult to tell what to read into it all, I'm afraid.
Apart from Eskom, has there been anything else that has particularly been shaping the markets? I know that in global markets, Trump has been making a lot of noise, out there. Is that affecting us in any way, whether it's in the equities or on the currency side?
Well, as we've discussed before in your show, political stories often affect the markets. Brexit. I just don't know what to make of Brexit. This has been hanging around for almost 12 months now, and they don't seem to be any closer to a solution than they were 12 months ago. And that could have worries, as we've mentioned before, on trade between not only South Africa and the United Kingdom, but with countries all over the world. But our markets are up today, basically on the back of world markets going up. And the Australian market was up 0.5% this morning. The French market was up 1.19%. The UK market was up about 0.25%. So our market had a very good day. We were up just on 1.33% on the All Share Index. And that's good news, although we're still way off the record highs which we achieved about 18 months ago now.
And then in terms of other things that have been going on around, I heard that there were pronouncements earlier this week, I guess in Parliament, by the Finance Ministry around some of their economic plans for the country. Is this weighing in any way on investor sentiment?
It's difficult to tell at this stage, because Peter Mboweni has indeed come out about 3 weeks ago with a sort of blueprint on how to improve the economy, and our president has, in fact, I won't say rubber stamped it, but he has certainly voiced his approval of that plan. But it's not a short-term solution. It's a plan that involves many aspects of the economy, going right from job creation, which has been on the agenda for over a decade now, right through to many things. And it's going to take several years for that plan to be fully implemented. So the market doesn't react to a plan which really has no effect on the economy today as we stand. As we've discussed before, economic markets work on sentiment. They work on what they think may happen, not what is actually happening. And it's always a very odd thing to predict. If Donald Trump and the Chinese are fighting over trade wars and it looks bad, the markets will go down.
Yeah.
If they all settle down, the markets go up. It's very strange how these things work, which makes the stock market an extremely difficult place to predict. Well, I'm not too sure what the exact reason why our market did so well today, other than the fact that it seems to be riding on the coattails of the markets around the world going up.
So that's been it. You heard right there from our financial expert, Ken Swettenham, that he's not 100% sure of why and how, you know, the markets are trading the way that they are today. But some of the issues that are affecting, you know, life at the moment is just some of the pronouncements that are coming in from the U.S., especially with Donald Trump and some of the Brexit situations. And then also, on top of everything, is just the fact that the Eskom saga continues, and they're talking about getting back some of the money that is owed to them from a community such as in Soweto. So that's been it in terms of our business wrap. On the other side of this, we tell you the state of your 100 Rand.
The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz.
It's time for us to get into the state of your 100 Rand in our Buffalo Index. But usually, you know, that's what we usually talk about, the 100 Rand. But for today, I decided that, you know, we should bring back Ever Wondered, simply because we are dealing with, you know, a tax issue. And for today, I decided that, you know, we're going to do two particular things, because I think we always hear the words taxes and we always, you know, pay them. But sometimes I don't think people actually know what they are. So if you've ever wondered what a tax is, it is a compulsory contribution to state revenue levied by the government on workers' income and business profits, or added to the cost of some goods, services and transactions. For today in particular, if you've ever wondered what a wealth tax is, it is a tax that is imposed on the wealth possessed by individuals in a country. The tax is on a person's net worth, which is the assets, which is their assets minus their liabilities. These assets may include, but are not limited to, cash, bank deposits, shares, fixed assets, personal cars, assessed value of real property, pension plans, money funds, owner-occupied housing, and trusts. Now, there's some very technical terms, but an ad valorem tax on real estate and intangible assets assets on financial assets are both examples of a wealth tax. So if you've ever wondered what a wealth tax is, now you know. So that's been it for Ever Wondered. On the other side of this, we're actually getting into the meat of today's discussion, and we're going to be having some talks with Isaac Macheko, who is an economist from FNB, to talk to us about what's going on there. And then we're also going to be talking to Dr. Basani Baloyi from Oxfam. So, Oxfam South Africa. So, keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz.
The Buffalo Index on the Business Buzz. You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
For today, we are talking about wealth taxes. Remember that you can join in the conversation. Let us know, do you understand wealth taxes? Have you been paying your own taxes? And then you can keep in touch with us on social media. Our Facebook page is Voice of Wits, that's VAO FM. And then our other Facebook page is Wits Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VAO FM. And then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. Now, according to Oxfam and the World Bank reports now produced in 2018, it is estimated that the wealthiest 10% of the South African population actually owned more than 90% of the total wealth in the country, whilst 80% owned almost no wealth. This therefore poses a challenge to economic development when the bottom 80% of the population actually owns no wealth, especially when a vibrant middle class is a key ingredient in economic progression, as evidenced in advanced economies. An important consequence of a highly unequal distribution of wealth in society is the undermining of social, political, and economic norms. So, for instance, high wealth inequality creates an imbalance of political power between citizens and the wealthy, who can potentially influence the political process unfairly. This can in turn reduce the optimum workings of a democracy. Now, these are some of the things that we're going to be talking about, and to just start off the conversation, we are going to be talking to an economist, that is Isaac Macheko, in just a few minutes, and then we're going to be talking to Dr. Basani Baloyi from Oxfam South Africa. Now, this has been quite an interesting issue. The one about wealth taxes, simply because there are a lot of schools of thought just around, one, how do you actually go about, you know, levying these, and what instruments do you use, what mechanisms. We heard just before the break that there are ad valorem taxes to properties, for example. There are estate taxes that people have come up with that are used, and also transfer taxes that are sometimes given out there when it comes to actually transferring wealth. And another popular one is capital gains. I'm just talking about the ones that are in existence at the moment. Capital gains taxes, for example, you own, let's say, 1 million shares in Facebook, and you decide that the share price has gone up, and then you sell your shares. If the price of your shares is above what it was, you know, when you bought the shares, you are charged a tax on whatever the difference is, and that is called a capital gains tax. So that's some of the mechanisms that are being used, and I know that some of the arguments that have been leveled against some of these wealth taxes is simply that you have wealthy people saying that they are contributing to the economy, they have businesses, they employ people, you know, why should they be going out there and actually being taxed even more on what is there? So on the line, we are joined by Isaac Macheko, who is an economist with FNB, to discuss some of these issues. Isaac, how are you?
Good evening, sir. I'm an economist at Nedbank, not FNB.
I am so sorry for that. We're with Isaac Macheko, who is an economist with the Nedbank. I think just to begin, my apologies again, I think just to begin the conversation.
Not a problem.
I think just to begin the conversation, could you just let our listeners know about what wealth tax is and, you know, how does it actually work?
Sure. I mean, wealth taxes are often a way for governments to raise once-off revenue. Once-off in the sense that, you know, government could pass special legislation and say, at a particular point in time, we will value assets of taxpayers, or actually look at the recorded assets of taxpayers and levy a tax based on their value. So it is basically a way of, you know, taking money from those who own assets and contributing that to the national kitty.
Now, I think earlier on in the show, we just detailed some of the research that's come out of the World Bank and Oxfam, and I think the consensus is that South Africa has one of the most unequal societies in the world. Do you think that levying, you know, wealth taxes is going to be something that will right-size the situation or help to close that income inequality gap?
You know, I have a problem with wealth taxes from two angles. Number one is that they are often once-off, or there's often a very long lapse before it gets reimposed or re-levied again. And number two, we got to define, you know, what is an asset rather that sort of raises the wealth of an individual, in this case, a taxpayer. Are we talking about income-generating assets? Because some people out there are sitting on idle assets which are not generating any income, and how will those be dealt with once determining what the appropriate level of the wealth tax will be and which assets will be taxed?
Yeah. And the other one?
What was your second question? I'm sorry about that.
No. I was saying, in that second one, could you expand?
Oh, I expand as in like how it gets determined which assets will be taxed.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, it's often a point of vigorous debate. Because remember, the rich can afford to sort of create very sophisticated schemes, trusts, and all that, and hide the direct ownership or beneficial ownership of assets in that way.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, you know, it becomes quite difficult for a taxing authority to really get a fair record of taxable assets.
Yeah.
Because these people will hide those assets, and even though, you know, some revenue can be raised, it will probably not be ideal in the sense that, you know, very low proportions are raised relative to what could be raised if all assets are sort of open.
Yeah. Hello?
Yes, I can hear you, sir.
Okay. I want to go back to the first point that you raised, and you're just talking about the time period and the span that lapses. If I'm understanding you correctly, are we talking about certain types of taxes? Like, let's say you buy stock in a company today, and, you know, after 10 years you sell those shares, and that once-off capital gains tax only happens after 10 years. There isn't some type of recurring mechanism for levying taxes against people that are, you know, beyond a certain income threshold.
Absolutely. I'll chat later about, you know, the utilization of the raised revenue. But I'll say to you, when it comes to these assets, I mean, just let's take the capital gains tax in South Africa, and let's talk about property.
Yeah.
It is levied only on second or subsequent properties, i.e. your primary residence is exempt from capital gains. So what people do is that when they realize that, you know, the property I own in a particular area has appreciated significantly in value, they just move from, you know, what's been their primary residence into that other property, which still, by the way, belongs to them, register that property as their primary residence, sell it, in that way avoid paying the capital gains tax, then move to the older property. So there are so many like tricks that people sort of employ to avoid these taxes. But the point I really want to make is, you know, once government has raised this extra revenue, what will it be utilized for?
Yeah.
In South Africa, with our very wide gap of income equality, or rather of a very large income inequality, I will say that, you know, once we raise a wealth tax, what are we going to use it for? Are we going to direct it towards education and training for maybe kids or people with low incomes at all? And even after that, you know, that could sort of lift those people a bit, give their kids a bit of a better future. But then we still face the challenge of making sure that those people do not fall back into the poverty trap. Basically, after we train them, we need to keep them employed. So if we are going to raise a once-off wealth tax, you know, whatever once-off means, what are going to be the benefits of raising that tax? In short, what I'd like to see is, if ever, which by the way I don't necessarily agree with, if ever we impose a wealth tax, we have to ensure that we will utilize that windfall efficiently and effectively, right?
Yeah.
Not all of it should go to current spending.
Yeah.
Or it can just go into education.
Yeah.
Some of them should go towards an investment. Investment in the sense of maybe state-owned entity or even the state investing that money in a project or project that will create jobs for the beneficiaries of that windfall.
Yeah.
Because its sustainability is very important. Sorry about that.
Now, something I like what you're saying, and one of the things I wanted to sort of get your thoughts on then is, I think in the U.S. election right now, one of the big issues that has come up, especially, you know, with candidates, like I think Elizabeth Warren has been championing a 2% tax on every individual in America who makes over 50 million who has a net worth of over 50 million US dollars, that if you have above that, then each dollar above that, you should be giving 2% every year or something like that. Do you think such a plan, you know, a similar type of plan would work in the South African context?
You know, that's not a once-off tax.
Yeah, it's something recurring.
It's just basically reversing what Trump did when he took over power. Remember, Trump cut taxes for the super wealthy. Well, he cut taxes across the board and also for the corporate sector. But the super wealthy benefited more than the people at the lower end of the income scale. So, I mean, raising taxes for the wealthy people in South Africa, you know, could maybe help to contribute to the fiscus. But in South Africa, we've got a very small number, at least relative to the size of the population. We have a very small number of those people who can contribute to that. And even now, I'll say to you, those people already carry most of the burden of tax contributions in South Africa. Remember, in the U.S., you have a massive population which is economically active. Their unemployment rate is only 3.5%. So you have a very broad tax base.
Mm.
Our tax base in South Africa is very narrow. And I can take you back. I mean, going back to 2016, 2017, we've seen taxes are going up in South Africa. Right now, people with a taxable income of 1.5 million rand a year or more pay a tax rate of 45%, which is quite high by, for instance, developing economy standards. So what we really need to do is, of course, we need to encourage these people to keep their money in South Africa, and those who are not in South Africa to bring their money here. But once we start imposing higher taxes on them, these people will definitely move their wealth around and, you know, move their money to tax havens where, number one, they can hide their assets quite easily, and number two, pay lower taxes.
Yeah. And then lastly, I wanted to also just get your thoughts on the notion that instituting wealth taxes, because, you know, just coming back to your example about what the Democrats are trying to do in the U.S. is to perhaps reverse some of the effects of the Trump tax breaks that were given at the start of his term. In the South African context, if you were to institute wealth taxes, do you think that's tantamount to, you know, this idea of simply taking from the rich and giving to the poor?
Well, you know, I'll say in South Africa, the big debate now is, you know, who are you going to target? You know, the novel rich, the newly rich people who gained from the post-94 dispensation more than the others. And I'm speaking here about the previously disadvantaged people. Are you going to tax them? Are you going to exempt them and maybe target certain racial groups who benefited more than the previously disadvantaged? You know, that's the big question in South Africa right now. And number two, you know, of course, you know, a once-off wealth tax is, we can put it that way, let's be honest.
Yeah.
It's taken from the rich and hopefully giving to the poor, no, not having maybe some of the money disappearing through the cracks, either be through state capture or any other malfeasance. So, you know, if we are going to impose higher taxes in South Africa, we've got to really think about it because our taxes are already high. And I'm talking here about individual tax rates.
Mm.
Our tax rates are already high, particularly for the high income earners. They're already high relative to the other developing economies.
Mm.
And we need to encourage or rather create an environment which is going to encourage these people to spend their money in South Africa and invest it here, not take it out of the country because, you know, if we do that, we'll be eroding a tax base that we already have right now.
Mm. So that's been us with Isaac Macheko, who is an economist with Nedbank, letting us know that a lot of thought needs to be put into any type of wealth taxes if legislators or regulators are to bring in that. He's saying the biggest danger is that South Africa already has some of the highest individual income rates for high-earning individuals relative to other developing economies, and he's saying that more needs to be done to actually make sure that these individuals spend their money in South Africa so that it helps with the circular flow of income in the country as opposed to sending it out. So that's been us on the other side of this. We're going to continue our conversation. We have Dr. Basani Baloyi, who is from Oxfam South Africa, who is going to, you know, be getting into some of the ethical considerations perhaps just around wealth taxes. So keep it locked. This is The Business Buzz.
More justice on The Business Buzz.
We are talking about taxes, specifically wealth taxes. We just came from talking to Isaac Macheko, who is an economist at Nedbank, and he was just explaining to us what the imposition of wealth taxes would mean for our economy. But for now, we want to get into the next part of the discussion. We're joined in studio by Dr. Basani Baloyi, who is from Oxfam South Africa, and she is a fellow on research and a policy. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
I'm all right. Before we, you know, get into the meat of the discussion, what's your position on this matter of the wealth taxes?
Well, you know Valpa?
No.
They call it it's a water company.
Yes,
it's actually produced by Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
I saw a meme once, and it says Valpa is not a water, product. It's rather a plastic company, right? So basically, people have captured water resources in order to make money from it.
Yeah.
So, and basically, when we think about wealth taxes, we need to think about that, you know, in terms of what is it that has been captured naturally or even man-made or human-made to make money, right? So in that sense, I do think there are ethical questions to be asked about a wealth tax. I do think it's something that should be implemented for historical reasons, for current political reasons. And so, as you said in your opening address, that not creating greater equity, what that actually means in terms of who is able to then influence the policy process that allows them to make more money. And so it does, so I mean, there are people who talk about the fact that because the economy has, we haven't, or society hasn't changed the structure of the economy, actually that opens up the pathways to corporate capture. And so this is something that is very crucial to the development of our economy and society.
Now, on that, what do you think are some of the ethical considerations? It's something that you brought up just now. What's your thinking, and how do you think perhaps now policymakers should be, you know, considering some of these issues? For example, we heard Isaac in the previous interview just talking about the fact that high-earning individuals are already paying 45% of taxes, and in his view, it would be very hard to expect, you know, those individuals to be expected to pay an even higher amount. So, you know, are those part of the considerations, you know, where are we, you know, on that?
Well, what you just outlined is 45% of income.
Yeah.
That's different from wealth.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think there's a conflation between terms here. So if we are to, for instance, look at the top 10% of the economy in terms of income terms, we know that they earn 63% of the national income.
Okay.
But then that same top 10% earn 90% of the wealth. Right?
Okay, okay.
So we are conflating terms.
So you want us to separate
these two, right? Because, I mean, there was an introduction about what we actually mean by wealth. And those are the assets, right?
Yep.
And so what we know, so your question around... if you can ask your question again around...
Yeah, no, I was just asking, what are some of the ethical considerations just around creating these, I guess, writing some of the balances, in the society? Because I think that's what one of the things that tax seeks to do is to sort of redistribute in some way the resources of the country. Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, the thing is that... You spoke about how we have a very, about our middle class, right?
Yeah.
So one thing that, there's a professor called Gabriel Palmer who was looking at basically the middle classes across the world.
Yeah.
And, looking at how they've performed, right? And what he came, well, he was actually looking at inequality, but through that lens. And what he's found is that the middle income bracket, right, in many other countries, has been able to maintain its share of the wealth time.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you earn 10% of the wealth as a middle income earner in 1990, you've been able to maintain that now. And the top 1% he was looking at have been able to increase their share, not by taking from the middle classes, but by taking from those at the bottom.
Yeah.
Now, South Africa is an anomaly, right, in all of this.
Okay.
Because, in fact, the middle classes' income share has shrunk.
Okay.
We have one of the most vulnerable middle classes in the world, right? And so this is very crucial when you think about the fact that who that constitutes, right? The expansion is of not people who inherited wealth, but those who had to establish it.
Yes.
And there's a vast difference between the two.
Yeah.
And if you don't have a change in your property rights, right, that that ensure that people can actually move up the income bracket, then that is the outcome of that process.
Yes.
And that is actually what he concludes, is the fact that, you know, we haven't actually done much to change the property rights, wealth, right?
Yeah.
Who owns it in a way that is equitable, because it's not about just a Patrice Motsepe or, you know, whoever, you know. It's not just about taking an elite class of black people and pushing them up, which is what has happened.
Yeah.
But it's actually about getting to the masses in terms of that redistribution. And yes, wealth taxes are a very crucial mechanism. But I was quite interested in what Isaac, I think, was saying from Nedbank, who said something to the effect of the fact that how people can basically speculate by using their houses as a way of undermining the tax system.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we had a law that says that you cannot actually earn or have three houses, because it's quite obvious that if you have three or more houses, or two or more houses, or four or more houses, then you are going to have kind of like a speculative way, right, of transacting, in which, and in fact, that is exactly how much of the wealth has been created. I wanted to take you back to your opener, the person who was, I think it's Ken, who spoke about his, I guess his shock and surprise that, you know, we are basically in an era of like jobless growth. Well, not even growth. No jobs, no growth. Manufacturing has gone up, down, but the stock market has gone up.
Mm.
And that is where, when we talk about wealth inequality, that is where it's at.
Okay.
Right? So how is it that the stock market can be going up, yet the fundamentals of the economy
are stagnant,
and they are not a reflection of what's going on, right? And that is how these guys accumulate their wealth. They accumulate from misery, right? They can shift their assets here and there as a way of accumulating wealth. So I do believe in a wealth tax. However, I also think that there is something that needs to be done around property rights that would make it even more effective. And I think that's actually crucial.
How big of an issue is this? Because you've definitely emphasized this. And what are some of the mechanisms that you think could be used? Are we talking about what you said just now, that perhaps limited the number of homes per se that a person has? Are we saying that for each additional home that a person gets, for example, that there must be some type of a tax on that? Are we saying that if I transfer property from myself to my son, for example, that my son should be made to pay an amount, or I should be made to pay an amount on that transference?
I mean, I do think we need to be careful, right, in so far as how, because we do have this fragile middle class that, in fact, has established itself through debt. And that's a crucial thing, right? So household debt, we also have one of the most highly, indebted countries in the world. So that is very crucial to think about how to structure it. So definitely thresholds, right?
Okay.
At what point would we consider, based on your wealth level,
yeah.
right? So your net wealth is this amount. Therefore, how do we structure the mechanism such that it targets you,
yeah.
right? So if I imagine that a billionaire has several houses, several properties. so we need to think through that. And they tend to be mansions, and that tends to take up land. And it tends to mean that some mansions are sitting quite, I don't know.
Idle.
Idle. And which is a huge problem that we actually have,
yeah.
right, in parts of Johannesburg, mm. is the idleness. Of certain properties, and also in parts of Cape Town, because we know that there are foreign nationals, which is fine, from like Europe and Germany, that basically use this space as a holiday home, and so and earn a lot of property. So how do we manage
all
that?
Of that, yeah.
You know, how do we tax them?
Mm.
So that, you know, it's not just passive income, and it's income that can be put or earnings that could be put to use, so that those who are at the bottom can, you know, get out of that shackle.
Without, I know you don't want to delve too much on the, you know, on the mechanisms and the hows, but I also want to pose the question that I had posed to Isaac to you earlier on, just around maybe not even the ethics, but what it might mean for South Africa, what Elizabeth Warren is talking about in America, you know, simply. If you have above this amount, 50 million, she's defined it. Yeah, she said if you're above 50 million US dollars, each year we need you to give 2% of your wealth, you know, to the state coffers so that we, you know, we redistribute. Is that too simplistic?
I do. You know what? That's a very good question. I do think that it's not a silver bullet, obviously. It's an instrument that should be seen amongst many others that are very crucial. So for instance, we can't talk about a wealth tax outside of actually looking at macro policy, which I consider to is not geared towards employment creation, but rather geared towards greater financial speculation, okay, through inflation targeting. This is how people earn, you know, the stock goes up because, you know, there are interest rates that benefit those who have assets, right? So for me, it becomes crucial to say we need to obviously expand the tax break, the tax base. Right, and so we need a macroeconomic framework that actually creates more jobs, right? And we need an industrial policy that works, and it cannot work outside of a macroeconomic framework that actually supports it, right? So that we don't just rely on those who are at the top 1%, although we don't actually want that kind of a thing, but we want to also expand that middle income bracket, and so that it is it becomes sustainable, because what that means is that we don't have the shrinking middle class that is extremely vulnerable. I mean, I'm you know, and obviously the bottom 40% are completely obliterated by this whole system. So definitely, and also social policy, you know, we need to get the things that we pay for to work. Right, we need our education system to work. We need a health system, for me, which is not in private hands as it is today. So there are a lot of connecting factors. So it's really not a silver bullet of like saying, okay, you know, this will equal that. It requires a lot of other complementary policies, but also a willingness to actually implement them.
In closing, I'd like to, you know, perhaps get you to answer two questions in one. Firstly, Where in the world have, you know, perhaps wealth-targeted taxes worked? You know, are there societies where wealth-specific taxes have worked? And then secondly, just talking about a point which you raised just now about expanding that middle class, do you feel like the debate around increasing the debate around instituting wealth taxes is being used as a way to scapegoat the actual need to increase the tax base? That instead of people doing the hard work of increasing that tax base, which I think at the moment is about 7 million people in a country of 58, you know, people would rather make populist noise around a wealth tax instead of, you know, doing the actual work that helps to expand that middle class.
Well, I mean, I think that in itself is a scapegoat. Saying that it's a scapegoat is also a scapegoat, because we are scapegoating the reality of the fact that much of this wealth that was accumulated was not accumulated by just means, and people have continued to benefit from it by just being born of a particular race, or have just been born of a particular gender or sexuality, like sex rather than a particular sex. So we need to consider that, right? So I would not say that it is a scapegoat. I think it's crucial, right? Mm-hmm. Because you cannot expand that that middle income bracket, or ensuring that those at the bottom rise above without tackling that.
The top.
You cannot.
Okay.
It's impossible, right? It has to be. Because then it becomes a poverty instrument, a poverty reduction instrument, if you do that, right? And we are targeting inequality. And so inequality means the reduction between or the gap, the reducing of
closing
the gap.
Okay.
Right. So I think that's critical. And as for your earlier question, some Nordic countries have been quite successful in this.
Okay. Actually, yeah. Because I've heard the Swedens of this world have, you know, some of the more equal societies in the world. Okay. Now, that makes perfect sense. So we've come to the end of the show. We're just going to take a quick break and then we'll come to the end of the show. This is the Business Buzz.
More justice on the Business Buzz.
We've come to the end of today's Business Buzz show. Thank you so much to everyone who listened to the show. Thank you so much to our amazing guests. Our first guest, that was Isaac Macheko, who is an economist from Nedbank, as well as our in-studio guest, that is Dr. Basani Baloyi from Oxfam South Africa, just giving us you know, some of her thoughts. My takeaway from what she said is the fact that everything is interlinked and interconnected. I like the fact that she, you know, highlights the fact that you can't be looking at these issues in isolation. For you to bring people up from the bottom, you also need to be attacking people from the top, so that you close that inequality gap. And also, I like the fact that she is also just talking about the fact that, you know, everything has to be done in conjunction. You can't be looking at one thing only, like expanding, you know, the middle class, without also, you know, talking about wealth tax. So it's been a very interesting show. Let us know what you think on social media. You can find our Facebook page, that is VowFM Voice of Wits, and then you can also find our other Facebook page, that is the Wits Radio Academy, and then on Twitter, our, you know, handle is at VowFM, and then you can find our hashtag, that is hashtag Business Buzz. You can find podcasts of the Business Buzz show on vits.journalism.co.za. So with that, we've come to the end of tonight's show. Thank you so much to our amazing team. Our technical producer is Akutlwano Serame, together with our executive producers, that is Simba Hunde and Glory Mabuza, together with our producer, that is Tando Mtimba. So don't miss the Business Buzz, same time, same place next week for more insight into the world of business. Next up on the VowFM lineup, we have Living Electro. Remember that the Business Buzz show is sponsored by ABSA. So for myself, Leo Mob, Justice Gawaza, and the rest of the team, is good evening and take care.
The Business Buzz. The Business Buzz Podcast.